Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy. I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and my sopping wet boy, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Moist.
Fully moist, straight out the shower, onto the podcast. Boom. Before we start, a quick plug for Nathan's video analysis of Huey Bier on our Patreon, which was really detailed work focusing on his first half against Manchester United. Is there a second half video to come, Nathan?
There could be. Tonight I'm doing Joe Roden with Harry, HB head coach. But yeah, we could revisit Hojbjerg if people are interested in that. It's whatever. Yeah, we're open to things, and we are closing in on 500 subs, at which point I will be making one of these videos available to non-subscribers. So I'll have a poll out in the coming days for you to pick which one you're interested in if you're not already a subscriber to the Patreon.
Great stuff, mate. Alongside that video, which is just fantastic, our ex-subs have now enjoyed 10 other videos, 13 additional podcasts, including Straight Off the Training Ground, which I do with Chris Summersell, and the first Windy's Youth Update podcast, which was like 40 minutes of me talking about youth players, plus 8 blogs, plus our Discord server. And if you join now, you get all of that. We've had multiple messages from patrons saying that we're offering too much content. They're scared of us burning out, bless them. Nathan, are you burning out at this point?
No, not at all. I'm really enjoying it. Like I just said, we're closing in on 500, which means that I can essentially commit to this part full time. Nearly, I've dropped pretty much all of my other freelance stuff. So like, I'm really enjoying it. I'm in a really good place with it. I've got a really good balance of things. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I'm proud of the stuff I'm putting out, and there's a lot of good stuff out there because I've got the time and the tools and the resources and everything else I could possibly need to do it. So it's going really well.
That's really nice to hear. Windy, do you ever feel like we're just the fertilizer and we're just letting Nathan blossom into this beautiful Tottenham tactics thing?
I've never thought of putting it in those terms before, but now you have. I've never felt so small, but you're absolutely right. No, honestly, this is it's fantastic for Nathan. It's fantastic for all of us, but this is what we wanted for Nathan. You know, this is exactly why we are charging, are monetizing for some of our content, because it has to be this way. It's the future of producing content like this, and I genuinely feel like our product is really good. And it's the nicest thing is we can still do a weekly free podcast for people who don't have the inclination or the funds to join the Patreon. So it's win-win, really. But what a lovely community on there as well. The Discord server is just full of like-minded, very pleasant, supportive people. And it's been great. So, end of plug. We'll move on to West Ham. Okay, I think it's best summed up by Ben Wilson, who via our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheExtraInch, he says, WTF, and then facepalm emoji. Annie Jameson says, when will we learn? Yeah, it certainly felt that way. Bardi, initial reflections on the West Ham game?
I'm still really upset by it. I don't think it helps. Normally, when I watch a game, I try to put my phone away because everybody these days, you don't know where they're watching it, and everybody's got time delays. Some people in front, some people behind. Yesterday, I was miles behind everybody else, but I just had to keep looking and checking as the minutes were ticking past. And I was watching it unfurl on WhatsApp, and then looking over at Sky Go and watching it unfurl in real life after a time delay. And it felt like I got stabbed twice. It's really frustrating that we've thrown away 2 points, which in this weekend with everybody else kind of messing up, it was crucial. And it's just I think a lot of it is down with sloppiness, and it's something that I want to see us improve, and something that everything for Jose that he was meant to bring, there should have been some tightening up at least, or some semblance of tightening up. And I just thought there was mistakes from everybody in that second half, and especially as the minutes went past.
Nathan, how about you? I have a suspicion that you might have some takes on this game. What did you make of it?
Well, I mean, I've come away feeling much more at peace, much more positive. Like, I guess it's kind of the opposite of, like, the way maybe you felt about the Southampton game. The way I felt about the North London Derby last season is that in both cases, each of us have been set in a particular mood by the first half, and then the final result and the second half hasn't been enough to sort of turn things around. But what we've seen in this situation is that, like, I was so pleased and so happy with the first half, I'm not that upset that we've thrown it away. Obviously, you know, we need the points. if we're talking about a title challenge, you've got to win as many as you put. You know, you can't really drop any more than what we've already dropped. You know, so it's frustrating in that sense. But I just think that we played really well until a few minutes at the end where we didn't, and that's, you know, that's pretty good. Some of our attack and play was absolutely brilliant. It's slightly old news now that Kane is fit and back to his best, but still every time you get to witness it, it's a real treat. And Bale looked good when he came on, you know, created a chance, didn't convert the chance, whatever. And you can certainly say, oh, if he scored that one, then we're not going to concede four, whatever. But I was really pleased with performance, basically, is the main takeaway.
My concern is we're really good when we're really good, but then when we're really bad, we're really bad. So,
but that's the history of Tottenham for 200 years. Like, that's
yeah. But what all of us were kind of hoping from this year is the players we signed and everything else, that I don't think this kind of trying to balance being really good and being really bad at the same time, it's definitely not going to win us the title, and it's going to hurt us with top four. There has to be some steps made, so when we are bad in games, when we go through those phases, we're not as terrible as we have been. And at the moment everything is pinned on a young Welsh lad coming back into centre back and sorting that out. It's just my concern is when we're great, we're brilliant, which is fine, but those 10 minutes when we're bad, when we give away a penalty after 30 seconds, or we keep chucking the ball in our own net, that's what gets me worried.
So interesting, I've come away from the game with a slightly different take from both of you, which I didn't expect. It's interesting though, and it means we can have an actual discussion. Quite often we just sit agreeing with one another on this podcast, don't we? So let's actually disagree for a change. I feel very at peace with it also, like Nathan, but for a very different reason. So I think partly because I'm not all in on Mourinho, that certainly helps. Sure. I am all in on the team, though. I mean, well, I'm definitely all in on the squad. I think the squad is fabulous. I think we've got the second best team in the league, and probably the third or maybe second best squad. But I thought we were just sort of fine in this match. And I thought, you know, Spurs this season tend to show up for one half, and that was certainly the case here. But even in the first half, I didn't think we were amazing. I didn't feel like we ever had control of the game. We had some fabulous moments where Harry Kane just goes from 0 to 100 literally 3 times, and then is that, like, defending his own box on the stroke of halftime as well, and doing things that only, like, an absolute elite player can do. aside from that, I didn't think we were special. I didn't think we blew them away in the first half. And I thought that was reflected in the expected goals at halftime. I kind of, there wasn't much in it between the two teams. And actually, I thought West Ham had some good moments. They got in down the sides of our centre-backs fairly frequently. So that's not just a sort of centre-back issue. That's a, sure, that's a team structure issue as well. And Antonio didn't quite get the beating of Alderweireld a couple of times, and Bowen didn't get the run of play on the other side a couple of times. And so it looked like we were keeping them arm's length. I'm not sure we actually were. West Ham had plenty of decent possession, I thought, in the first half even. And obviously the second half is a nightmare. I mean, Bardi's right. The second half is a bit of a disaster. And not just the last 15 minutes either. It kind of started from as soon as they came out after half time, but I feel kind of at ease with it because we're a team in transition. We're still a new team that's adjusting to new players, and we've got a new structure. We're playing 4-3-3 a lot more now. And we've got two attacking fullbacks, which we've not really done much under Mourinho, and Bale's still coming to terms with what it means to be a Premier League player again, and all these things. And I think it's to be expected that we'll drop some points. And I don't know, I think people got a little bit carried away after the United game because it was such a thrashing. And I think it's important just to sort of be okay with this and not get carried away with this like you got carried away with the United game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I think for me personally, after United and everything else, I really did start to believe. And I'm not saying I'm a disbeliever, but I just think it was a little bit of a wake up call when we look around our squad. Perhaps it's not as strong as we think it is, because when Ndombele and Son were on that pitch, we were a different team. And then all of a sudden you bring on Lucas and Winks, and the overall level of the game just drops. You got all Lucas starts running into dead ends. Winks is just not the same player as Ndombele, and that's not a problem because Ndombele is brilliant. But I think for us to get through the season, we're going to need a bit more from these guys, and I just don't think we have it. And I think had Lo Celso been fit, perhaps we would have held on for that. I just think our squad is perhaps not as strong as we believe it. But we all think Lucas is rubbish anyway, so it's not a surprise. Lamella would have been a much better outlet for that last 20 minutes than Lucas.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly appreciate that point. You mentioned Winks there, and many of our fans have mentioned Winks in light of this result. So Graham Rundle, again on our Facebook, he says, "Why did Winks come on? He's a non-forward passing calamity. What is the first rule in football you're taught at grassroots level? If in doubt, get it out. Yet he decides to try to be clever and run it out of defence. He's not good enough for our squad. He's only in it to meet the Premier League criteria. He wouldn't get into a Championship team." Barney, you made similar comments about Winks's touch in the lead up to that third goal, but do you really think that Winks is to blame there? And do you think Winks coming on cost us?
You can't blame Winks for somebody spanking it in from 35 yards. It's not his fault. I think Winks was trying to be a little bit clever. I also agree that he was fouled, so he was blocked off. Had that dropped to Sissoko, that ball's getting punted. Had it dropped to Kane, he would have taken a touch and bought a foul. Had Aurier would have just wiped out everybody in within spitting distance. So I think Winks can be held a little bit responsible from that, but he's not to blame for the goal because Lanzini does that. He can give him 100 balls, he'll never do that again. But I think Graham is a little bit harsh there. I do agree that he helps with our Premier League quota, which is probably why Winks is so important to the team, but he's definitely not Championship. He's mid to lower level Premier League. It's a shame that it kind of gets pinned on him, because every season we do have a scapegoat, and it's looking increasingly likely that it might be Winks this year.
Well, I remember when Winks first broke into the team, he was one of the players we would bring on to see out games. Do you remember that? And because he's a good possession player and he's helpful to have on the pitch. And that didn't seem to be the case here, but I don't think we got worse after Winks came on specifically. I felt like we were on a downward trajectory already. But having said that, I thought Ndombele was our best player, possibly aside from Kane, because of Kane's goal involvement. But Ndombele was really, really good in this match. And I definitely think him coming off, it could be argued that cost us because of the type of player that he is and the amount of pressure he can absorb. But then he's not gonna be able to play 90 minutes twice a week, three times a week at this point. It's unrealistic to believe that. And we have to be able to rely on our squad. And Winks, for my money, is a good squad player. I'm very happy to have Harry Winks in the squad. And I think normally you bring Harry Winks on in this situation and it works out fine. It's just, you know, football does go a bit mad sometimes. Mourinho pinned this on a psychological deficiency. He says, "My guys were not strong enough to cope with it psychologically. And in the last few seconds, we lost 2 points. I have to analyse the second half and I have to do it internally. But for you, I prefer to say that football happened and praise West Ham's belief." So two of his sort of mantras there, recurring mantras, coping psychologically and belief, West Ham's belief. Nathan, these have been mantras now for 11 months, the 11 months we've had Mourinho in charge. He's gone big on changing the mentality of the club and arguably made that his biggest priority. How do you square that with this result?
It's just this endless cycle, isn't it? Where, and it's very reminiscent of the documentary where it's like pre-match, he talks about mentality. At half-time, he talks about mentality. Football happens in between those events and then we form the narrative from there. It's just like, yeah, if he's been banging this drum and this has been his main point of focus the entire time, then like, does he not share blame for the mentality of the players? How long do we keep blaming that? Do we need to continue to overhaul every single member of the squad until they're all Mourinho players? I don't know, man. It's for me, and he was directly asked and denied this, but he was asked, was there a tactical intention to sort of surrender possession in the second half and sit on the lead? And he denied that. But I find that hard to believe. You brought up expected goals earlier. So at half time, we put up 1.3 expected goals. We'd scored three from that, and Keys on Twitter pointed out that like we'd essentially scored from our first three chances, which is very useful if you're a Mourinho side because you can then manipulate the game state and do things from there. Okay, fair enough. I was pretty happy with our attacking play in the first half. I was really happy with our attacking play in the first half. Yes, we were sort of clinical with it to a degree that we're not always going to be. But nonetheless, I thought we were creating the chances. If we'd have had another first half, if we'd had another 45 like the first, we'd have been in a really, really good position. But I very much see a plan in the second half to save some energy, to let the game drop off, to take it easy, to allow West Ham to have the ball. And there are lots of reasons why that's a smart decision. But also, you are bringing Winks into a position where he needs to be a defender in deep areas and not give away free kicks and clear the ball, and you're inviting situations for Davinson Sanchez to be the left-sided centre-back. Mm. And obviously the substitutions that we made are going to have some effect on our ability to keep giving the game at West Ham. But I thought that we should have tried. For me, we had everything we needed to win this game, but we made a poor decision collectively. It won't just have been whatever was said at halftime. It would be down to individual player decisions as well. But we allowed West Ham to come back into this game when we didn't need to. And we don't need to next week, and we don't need to the week after that. And that's why I think I'm more positive, because I think there's a pretty easy fix, not an extremely easy fix, not a single decision that you switch one thing, a yes becomes a no, but something that's fairly easily coached around, or should be fairly easily coached around. I don't really buy what Mourinho says about this game.
I'm a bit concerned about our inability to manage chaos. It's when a team have been dominated, Newcastle, West Ham, and then they just revert to let's just cause chaos in Tottenham's penalty area and see what we can do from it. Everton scored a goal from just chucking it in the mix. I don't think there wasn't anything too sophisticated in it. West Ham's goal, free kick, the equaliser, free kick, drop and knock down there. The other goal, an own goal. Teams will just start, let's just panic Tottenham's defence. And I think that's when, I hate this word as well, like you guys, but I just think I had that lack of a leader, somebody to get their big head on that corner, on the Balbuena cross. It went over Sanchez, and then Balbuena got above Sissoko. It's just sometimes you just wish for like a Van Dijk perhaps, or anybody, just to get their face on it and clear it. I just think sometimes we bring the chaos upon ourselves. When Carroll won the header up against Dyer, it's like, come on Dyer, win it. And then the panic goes away. I just think sometimes we start to panic a little bit, and that's our undoing. And you can almost attribute that to most of the goals we conceded at home this season.
Very small point on that. I really wasn't happy with Sissoko marking Balbuena. I thought that was a really poor team decision. I don't know who works out who marks who. It could have been Lloris when he was organising that free kick. It could have been predetermined before the match. I wasn't happy with that matchup at all. And that was shown when Sissoko didn't even get off the ground. It's basically a free header when you're being marked, which is completely unacceptable. Great ball, mind you, from Creswell, who does take a mean free kick. I mean, he went close with a shot as well. He's a very good set piece specialist. Another reason why we should have been well prepared for them, though. A few more questions, and I'm going to group a couple together. So John Hannon, again via Facebook, he said, "They say defences win titles. Can Jose finally sort this defence?" And Eric Ronan says, "Who needs to go? Who actually aren't good enough and bring the squad down? Mistakes are bound to happen, e.g. versus Man United at the end of last season, but we could have lost this match. There was a missed shot and goal that Lloris was shocked by. It's clear that central defence is the weakness." Is this the time to start sort of thinking about which players aren't up to it now we've remodeled our squad, and do we need to actually take some action and ship out some of these players and look to replace them? What do you think, Nathan?
I mean, you're always preparing for the next window, aren't we? So I guess you can say, you know, Vertonghen and Alderweireld falling off from being two of the very best centre backs in the world was something that we should have seen coming for years and years and years, and we should have better planned around that. Okay, we spent over 40 million on Davinson Sanchez. That hasn't worked out for us. We clung on to Dyer. We brought in Foyt and things didn't work out there. So maybe we've been a little unlucky. Maybe we've been a little poor with how we've prepared for the situation, but we're in it now. We have an issue at centre back. We've brought in a young new centre back who I'm going to be looking at more in depth in a couple of hours' time. So I'll have a better take on that purchase in a little bit. But there's definitely some personnel issues in defence. But I also think that even though the window is closed, there's someone who we should still bring in. Desperately, desperately, we need a set pieces coach, or a defensive set pieces coach, and an attacking set pieces coach, or a team of set piece specialists. Mm-hmm. Because the way that we defend and attack set pieces, and the way that Mourinho's teams have been defending and attacking set pieces for a decade now is really below par. It's okay for a coach of Mourinho's caliber, as much as I deride him, he is obviously a coach of an incredibly high caliber, to have weaknesses, to have areas of his game where he isn't, you know, the absolute best, and he needs to swallow his ego and recognize that, and bring in one of my mates off Twitter who can organise a series of set piece drills defensively and attacking, because we're conceding maybe not always directly from these set pieces, but as a result of these set pieces, just so much. At the moment, our defence is by tall players, and as you suggest, maybe let Hugo tell who everyone is marking. It's something that needs work desperately. But again, like with our management of the second half, it's also something that I think is fairly easily fixed. You know, a team of set piece coaches, and I really don't think you need more than three, right? Cost a hell of a hell of a hell of a lot less than, you know, a single player, of which we brought seven in over the summer.
It's a great point. It's a really good point. And it's something, funnily enough, a comment Mourinho made actually sparked me thinking something similar. He had a little bit of a cheap shot at David Moyes finding his new Fellaini in Souček, who is, you know, in fairness, Souček is fantastic in both boxes from set pieces. And that made me feel like, maybe you shouldn't be joking so much about that, Jose, because we could do with someone who's that dominant in both boxes from set pieces as well. It's like, it's not to be sniffed at. It's actually really genuinely useful. And also, he was a huge proponent of Fellaini at times. When he was coach of Man United, yep, he would use Fellaini for exactly the same purpose. So that got me thinking too. Bardi, I can see you're waiting to say something.
Well, we do have Kane, who proved himself quite a few times to be an excellent defender at set pieces and corners. There was one right towards the end of the first half where he put in a great block. I would like to say I've been quite negative, and I think I haven't given enough appreciation to the three goals that we did score. I think we have skipped over that a little bit. I thought, especially the third goal, I thought Reguilón showed everything that we want from a fullback, and
he's class.
He's a wonderful playing. But there was one moment in the second half where I thought, I really, really, really like this guy, when he came across and just wiped out their defender. He cut across from left back. Perhaps it was a foul, but he was never going to get a red card from it. It would have been yellow at best, at worst. But I thought he had a really strong game, and I really liked that goal that he set up for Kane. I thought that's a proper nice little indicator for future goals as well.
It's all about the first goal, though, with Kane's QB pass and Son's immaculate curled finish into the bottom corner.
I was watching us counter, and I watch Spurs games, nearly all of them, with my dad, whose vision is leaving him. And something I'm in the habit of doing on his behalf is naming the player on the ball for him. So we start this counterattack, and this white blonde player picks up the ball deep in midfield, and I go, "Oh, who's that?" And then this perfect ball is played, and as he's playing the pass, I go, "Oh, it must be Kane. You can tell it's Kane because of the quality of the delivery as it finds Son. What a ball." And he just keeps doing it, man. Incredible. Incredible player.
The problem with that goal is, like, if you live in the countryside and you open up your bedroom window and you see this beautiful mountain every day, it kind of, like, we see this beautiful goal being scored all the time. So it's just like, oh, okay, there's that beautiful view. There's that beautiful goal, which is why I think the third goal and the second goal were they really stood out for me, because they were a little bit different. Kane over the top, Son cuts in, whack, goal. It's just like, yeah, okay, that's kind of par.
Yes, it's special though. The quality of the pass is special. I don't know if you saw earlier, Stats Bomb posted Kane's radar. I think refer to them as radars for this season so far. And he's in the 100th percentile for XG assisted, and the 8th percentile for shot to touch ratio. The point being from that, I assume that he doesn't get on the ball much, but when he does, boy, does he make it count. It's insane how well Kane's playing at the moment, and I mean outperforming everything. But it's this level is probably unsustainable, but then we've seen Kane sustain it for a season before when he was playing at a similar level, so fingers crossed that continues. He's just ridiculous right now, absolutely ridiculous, and I love him. Having said that, a question from Rob. I'm going to say it's Rob Kleinite. Sorry, Rob, if I've got your surname wrong. He says, "Will Kane ever square a ball when he's on a hat-trick? Bergwijn has every right to be upset because he was available for two easy attempts and Kane tried to shoot through two defenders both times." What do you think, and what do you think is the right thing to do, Nathan, in those situations?
There was another one for Son as well, an even worse one in my opinion. But he was on a hat-trick, so he's shot. He's always going to. For the most part, you say that's Harry Kane. You take that. That's a facet of who he is. That's a facet of his mentality. He only scores as many goals as he does because he thinks in this way. Nevertheless, ideally, I want him passing there. I would ask him, I would even, as his coach, I would say, "Hey, as, have you considered, I know that you're on a hat-trick, but it would be really nice, and don't get upset with me here, but just play around with the idea of playing the ball and securing the easy goal for your teammate there." He'll say yes, boss, and then not do it, and there's not really a lot you can do about it. It's slightly annoying. For the most part, you just accept his part of who he is. Of course he should pass there, but he never will.
There's a funny thing that sometimes when Kane is on a hat trick, I feel inclined to take him off because I think his hunt for the hat trick just clouds his decision making. And I think after two goals, after he hit the post, maybe we could have given Vinicius his debut, and then maybe Vinicius passes one of those opportunities. But maybe Vinicius is a log and he's not very good anyway.
I also tweeted during the game about how many unnecessary minutes Kane has picked up because of time spent on a potential hat-trick. And I just think that, like, it's really doing us some damage, like, both in possession and in terms of how many minutes, unnecessary minutes at the end of games he plays. All right, you made the point earlier that maybe Kane could have helped us see out the game with his general brilliance. But beside that, he's played on through games and not been subbed off. And he's also playing in this selfish way. I just think that, like, three is such an arbitrary number of goals to specifically be targeting as opposed to 2 or 4 or 1 or 5, because it's like essentially the value of a hat trick is that they're called hat trick and you get the match ball. What I think we need to invest in is you get a bunch of Premier League footballs and you spray paint them gold and we call them brace balls, and every time he scores a brace we sub him off and we give him a brace ball we can put up in his massive, the room in his house that is dedicated to match balls, and every time he opens the door a whole bunch of them come flooding out because the room can't contain all the match balls he has. He can start putting gold brace balls in there and then we can sub him off at 2 goals and it's fine.
He also needs hat-trick of assists balls as well. Yes. So maybe some silver paint for those.
Yes.
I mean, objectively, we were 3-0 up and we've got a striker who has a history of getting injuries from being overplayed. There's no real excuse for, and we've just signed a new striker for the first time in 2 years. There's not really an excuse for leaving him on the pitch. He was obviously there because he was on a hat trick right now. There's no other reason why he was on the pitch. I mean, the fact that we then draw 3-3 is irrelevant in my view, because that shouldn't happen. We should be able to manage a game at 3-0 to win comfortably. And Kane should be off. He should be off the pitch, and you can bring on Bale or you can bring on Carlos Vinicius and you rest Kane and then everyone's happy in theory. But he's on a hat trick, so he's not going to come off.
This is there was something you said there, Windy. This is the ridiculous thing. How many goals do we need to score to be safe? Like, are we going to have to get to a point where we've got 4 and then it's just like, no, we can't rest anybody because we need 5 just to be safe? This is the annoying thing about this. The fact that we drew with West Ham, it happened. It happens. But the fact that we were 3-0 up and it went, we just need to, I'm not saying it again, we need to be better. But I do have a quick question for you two. We don't have to go into detail over it, but is this Harry Kane the best Harry Kane that we've ever seen?
For me, yes. Jeez. Yeah, because of the variety to his game now, which has developed, and the sort of talismanic element to him, which is, I mean, it's Kane and Son. I think that's what it is, actually. I think that's what it is. It's Kane and Son. Whereas before, when it was Kane, it was fantastic, but he was often carrying us by himself. Now he's got his sidekick, who is nearly as good as him, frankly. Son is just in the most outrageous run of form as well. He's fabulous, unplayable talent on the left side of our attack. And it's a joy to watch. And Kane's pinging passes 60 yards that De Bruyne would be putting in his top 10 passes of all time. You know, he's doing everything. He's wonderful.
It's that list of 10 passes is longer than 10. I think he's probably still just a shade off his sort of 2017 best, but it's close. It's really close.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
One thing you touched on, Bardi, when do we feel safe? How many goals do we have to score to feel safe? Did you ever think you'd be saying that about Mourinho Tottenham team?
Of course, I had full faith in our leader and manager.
No, but I mean, it's not a trait of his, is it? You feel, the point of Mourinho is you always feel safe when you're ahead, right? That's what he does. He gets to a leading position and then he sees games out.
His second spell at Chelsea, that first part of the season where he was smacking in the goals. They were a bit soft then. They did have a weakness, which we showed. We did put five goals past them. And then after that, all of a sudden he went, uh-oh. And then he shut up shop, which maybe this is what happens to us at some point. But I don't think we have the players to pull it off. But yeah, Mourinho, for a lot of this defensive stick for Mourinho comes from the time he beat or he drew with Barcelona at the Nou Camp with Inter with 10 guys, where he did park the bus. And a few times against Barcelona, which was one of the best teams in the world, where he did defend deep. But I don't know if he is this brilliant defensive coach. Maybe he's just this, as Nathan's talked about a few times, he's just this guy that uses a defensive setup to play counter-attacking football. I don't know if he is this brilliant kind of defensive guy. Maybe his Man United team ended up being a bit defensive because they were just really turgid and rubbish at going forward, so they just looked defensive. Maybe.
Well, you know what comes next? What comes next is we go back to the lopsided back four formation, and we have Ben Davis back, or we have Doherty and Aurier sidelined, and Tanganga on the right as a third right-sided centre back.
How did you both feel about Aurier starting this game?
I presume it was because of Doherty's involvement for Ireland in their matches, and it was simply a case of who was fittest.
Oh, did he play three games?
He definitely played two. He might have been three.
Okay.
I got the feeling he played in all three games, and when I saw it, I just thought he was too tired, and they just didn't want to risk him.
He wasn't good. He wasn't good in this one, Aurier.
I mean, he sort of mirrored to the team. I thought he was pretty strong in the first half, and then made a series of Aurier tier errors leading up to us conceding three goals, which is what you get, I guess. That danger's just always going to be there with him.
Yeah. I'm talking of rotation. We have got another game this week. We play an Austrian team in the Europa League, Linzer Athletic Sport Club, commonly known as LASK or Linzer ASK. I didn't know much about them, so I looked them up on Wikipedia, and here are the things I found out.
Sweet.
They have a cousin of Marcel Sabitzer of Leipzig, who is Thomas Sabitzer, a 20-year-old winger. Never
Sign
heard
him
of him. And they have four Austrian national team players, all of whom have one cap, so they're very much kind of fringe players. Reinhold Rampft, who's a defender. Alexander Schlager, who's a goalkeeper. Thomas Goiginger, who's a midfielder. And Germot Trauner, who is a defender.
I love a good Austrian name.
They're
fun to say, aren't they?
I do apologise to any Austrian or German people who I've just offended.
I would like to retract the apology on Windy's behalf. For my own enjoyment.
This is a game that we should be able to win comfortably, in theory. Bardi, do you expect full-on rotation?
Yeah, I expect full-on rotation. Vinicius to get his start, his debut, and then massive changes everywhere, for sure.
My friend Tiago, the world's only Europa League hardcore fan, texts me saying, are you previewing LASK? Have you been watching LASK? Have you got any thoughts on LASK? Have you been watching the way that they play? And I said, well, no, because we signed a player. I'll be doing more match previews down the line, but at the moment I wanted to look at our signing, and he was so frustrated at me that I'm prioritising looking at our new signing as opposed to looking at our Europa League group stages. So I'm afraid I haven't done my homework on LASK. Apparently I should have done. Perhaps they play in an interesting way or have some interesting players, but I will have to find out in real time, I'm afraid.
If the stream works this time. So we've got a few other things to talk about. There's a few talking points. First one on the list is the goalkeeper situation. I thought this was worth discussing. So when Joe Hart signed, one of the reasons the signing was celebrated was because it would allow Alfie Whiteman and Brandon Austin to go out on loan. Now that this hasn't happened and Gazzaniga is still at the club too, do you feel any differently about the signing of Joe Hart, Bardi?
No, I think Joe Hart was added for what he can give as a number two goalkeeper. I've said before, I think he's more vocal. I think he's a little better perhaps at organising his defence. I think Gazzaniga's very much stay on your line and try and save it. When he does come out, he normally tries to decapitate somebody. So I don't think Hart was a good signing, but I think he was probably part of that, as we've said many times, mentality, winner, experience, everything else in the changing room, which I think is really bad. I would like to have seen Whiteman and Austin go out on loan. I think it's It's a shame they haven't.
Any thoughts, Nathan?
We have downgraded our second-choice goalkeeper. We have failed to use the opportunity provided by that to send out our young players on loan. We have a player in the squad who can't be registered for the Europa League. And despite all of that, we threw away a three-goal lead to West Ham. What we should have done, obviously, is use one of our subs, left Kane on the pitch, and subbed in Hart to play in place of Hugo so we could better shout at our defenders and it would have all been fine.
What just terrible, terrible winning mentality.
Oh, fuck.
Him celebrating, not celebrating, but hugging all the West Ham players because he used to play there really did annoy me. It's like, this guy you take on a work conference and just doesn't add anything. All he does is just smash the buffet and make you queue up for ages because he drinks all the coffee. And he is a pointless signing. The whole reason for signing him, it just doesn't seem to have worked.
It's worse than pointless signing. It's a negative signing. Mm. We have spent money to decrease the quality of our squads and our general condition.
Yeah, and the opportunity cost is that like $30,000 of wages going towards him that could go to someone else.
You could hire
go to a set piece coach.
Yeah, yeah. There we go.
Yeah, you could hire a team of set piece coaches for the next 5 years for the same cost as Joe Hart's wages for 1 year. That's the opportunity cost there. I did think that was worth talking about. I'm disappointed that that Whiteman and Austin haven't been farmed out on loan. Very disappointed. Austin is actually the England under 21 backup goalkeeper. I mean, he's very highly thought of. We should be finding a loan club for him. We did send one young goalkeeper out on loan, which I don't really get the rationale behind it. But Oluwayemi has gone out to Maidenhead. Why him and not any of the others? But fine, it's good for him. He'll hopefully get some first team football.
Do you think
Do you think
they haven't gone out on loan because they're not good enough, or because nobody went in for them, or we just held them back? What do you honestly believe?
They're definitely good enough. It makes you wonder what we're asking for. Whether we want a loan fee, possibly. So for example, a club like Wycombe Wanderers, who are a championship club, just come up from League One. They've got a very flimsy squad, and their goalkeeper Ryan Alsop is objectively a bad goalkeeper. He's just not very good. Lovely guy, not very good. Austin and Whiteman would both be improvements on Ryan Alsop for Wycombe. We should be paying them to take hit them and pay. Get our players a year of championship football. It will be a fantastic experience. And then you never know, they might do so well that next year they can go on loan to Sheffield United like Dean Henderson did. That's what we should be looking for. Next thing to have a quick chat about, just because I thought this was amusing, is this little argument, I suppose, that's started brewing between Arsene Wenger and Jose Mourinho. So Mourinho was asked why he doesn't appear in Arsene Wenger's new book. Mourinho basically prods the bear and says, because he never beat me. And Wenger comes back at him this week and says, it doesn't upset me. With him, it's constant provocation. I feel like I'm at kindergarten, but that is part of his personality. And it is false. We beat him 2 out of 19 times. We won, and there were also a lot of draws. And it is not you who wins. You participate in the victory. It is we who win. The manager is there to get the maximum out of the team. I thought you'd enjoy this little battle, Bardi. What have you made of it?
I mean, the Mourinho-Wenger fight goes back ages and ages. Didn't Mourinho call him a voyeur, that all he does is sit at home and watch what he's doing? I do find it quite funny that Wenger's come back with, I beat him twice out of 19 times. It's like when your wife says, you haven't done this, or I did it once. When did you do it? Months ago. It's just like, shut up, Wenger. You've been kind of told, just accept it. It's very Mourinho. We know he can be quite funny, quite charismatic. I think Wenger does have a point where it's like we, but then it's always I instead of we, the team and everything. But I think the difference there is Arsene Wenger's identity and his football career is so tied into one club, it does become a we. Whereas Mourinho has jumped from club to club to club that he can't really call anywhere he's at we, so he just uses I instead. So I think Wenger needs to shut up a little bit there.
They're both right. They're both children. The entire process is absurd. Managers keep releasing books in which for 400 pages they say nothing, And then the conversation around books in which they say nothing is a series of headlines for months, and then it's someone else's turn to bring out a book about their time in which they say nothing in the book. It's an entire circus.
I mean, footballers' books are quite bad, like, most of the time. There's the occasional good one. Pirlo had a couple of good bits, but that was mostly about jamming a fork into Gattuso to see how upset he would get and stuff like that. But on the whole, I tend to avoid books written about footballers unless it's something historical going back in time, or something serious has happened to that individual. Otherwise, it's just a kind of, what do you say, it's just blowing a bit of smoke up their ass.
We've had a couple of emails this week, two that I want to mention in particular. Firstly, Robert Ford emailed in a brilliant email about what it's like being a fan in Australia, and he mentions the time differences and how that plays out for him. Something that I hadn't considered at all, which he mentions, is when he's talking to work colleagues about the Premier League, he has to check with them first whether they're up to date with the scores, because the time difference is such that you don't quite know if someone will have caught up with what's happened yet, or whether they're going to wait until they get back from work to kind of watch the highlights. Which I thought was really sweet to hear about. So thank you, Robert, for the really interesting email. And Ben Schiffer, who sent a lengthy email, but there's one part in particular that kind of was the crux of it, which was fascinating to me. He talks about how Bale's time at Spurs first time around was so exciting and made many people fall in love with Tottenham. And he talks about how Mourinho did that for him with football in 2003-04. He says, at that time, I'd never, ever seen anyone like Mourinho. He was so young, charismatic, and extraordinarily articulate that he managed in his first press conference to craft a line that's still being misquoted 20-odd years later. He took a nearly not-quite team and, with an obscene amount of money in fairness, turned them into an utterly brutal team that pulverised English football, ruthlessly scored enormous amounts of goals, and let very few in, and blazed a trail for the absurdly high point totals that Man City and Liverpool have since followed. And at that time, it was utterly laughable to think that Spurs might ever have a manager as good as him. He adds, I'm not saying that Nathan is wrong about Mourinho, just that he might not be quite as dismissive of him if he'd met him in the way that I did. I thought that was a really interesting point. Any comment from you two?
Well, let Nathan go first on this one.
Yeah, no, I acknowledge his angle on things. I think that makes a lot of sense. But Bale came on and created a really good chance, and Mourinho had the team drop off, so I'm still right.
Recency bias.
Therefore, based on the most recent thing that could possibly have happened, no. No, I think that's a really good point, to be fair. But I guess we can't really shake off our own formative biases all the way, as much as we like to say that we do or we try to. It's still there. Definitely, nostalgia plays a huge role in my perception of Bale signing, for sure.
I think there is this whole story behind Mourinho about changing Chelsea. They were Champions League semi-finalists the year before. They did finish top four under Ranieri. They already had the Abramovich money. There was quite a number of players already in place. So yes, even though I am a Mourinho apologist, he did change Chelsea, but they were already quite changed when he arrived there. He just took a few players that he'd had at Porto who were exceptional and didn't just build on from that. So it wasn't like he came in and built this team out of nothing. It was already Abramovich powered.
Nathan's just reminded me that we didn't actually touch on Bale's chance, so we should probably do that, because it was pretty special seeing Bale come off the bench against West Ham, his first touch being a free kick, which he got on target, although it wasn't a very good free kick. But the chance he had was notable for me for a couple of reasons. Firstly, if you watch him run forward during that break, it kind of reminded me of how much he's not what he was, because although he's a really powerful runner still, he doesn't have that kind of excessive acceleration that would have taken him clear of players all those years ago. However, what he did show was he still has fantastic footwork, really, really quick feet, and lovely, lovely movement to bring the ball inside and open up the opportunity for the shot. Disappointing finish at the end of it, but that'll come. That'll come back in time, the finishing ability. What did you think of Bale's cameo?
I mean, there wasn't a huge amount of sort of detail to take away. He had a few touches, and then he had a really lovely run and quick feet to create a chance for himself. I do think that he was fouled as he took the shot, but because he took the shot, there's no conversation around it at all. We saw something that is grabbing a few more headlines as well the other day with Van Dijk. Got a shot away, was offside, Pickford clattered him. He's managed to do some ligament damage. It looks like he's going to be out for ages. That's going to be headlines and headlines for weeks. And hopefully, maybe, that might begin to form a discussion around fouling players as and after they've taken the shot. But it seems like it won't. It seems like instead it will be a discussion about VAR. Instead it will be a discussion about offside. And instead it will be a discussion about Liverpool Football Club. Which is very frustrating, because for me, the underlying issue there, before anything else, is the way we treat forwards as they are taking shots. Mason, horrible ankle injury against Sunderland, but he got the shot away. I remember Cahill completely upending Rose as he scored in the 5-3 against Chelsea. I remember Dunk going all the way through Delhi as he took a shot against Brighton. And we see Bale fouled, but because he got the shot off, even though it seems very likely to me that the quality of the shot was affected by the foul, because he got the shot, no one cares. No Tottenham players calling for the foul. No West Ham players looking sheepish. None of the coaches are kicking off. The ref doesn't look at it. Even Gareth Bale, who is notorious for claiming any possible foul that he can, quite happily gets back off the ground, dusts himself off and carries on with things. But it's a foul. And people say, well, if he takes an extra touch and doesn't take the shot, then he's fouled. But it's the same contact regardless, you know? I don't know the exact history of how you've arrived at the situation where you can basically do whatever you want to a player as long as they get the shot off, but it's the mutual understanding from absolutely everybody involved.
It does get called up sometimes. Xhaka did one against Sun at the Emirates. Davies with Pogba. Davies had released the ball, but then got wiped out, and they gave a penalty there. But I agree with you. There's no. There needs to be a little bit of consistency there.
Yeah, it's a great point. And the Liverpool one with Pickford. The other thing is, it'll become an issue of whether you can still send a player off even though offside has been called, which is irrelevant because it's still on the field of play. But you're right that all those things will be the discussion rather than the player getting the shot away, which is such a strange way of looking at football. Final question. This is from Dan Alvarez. He says, this is really interesting as well. He says, it feels like the general consensus is that Tottenham sort of won this transfer window. And while you were all talking about it, I found myself thinking that so much of my non-Gareth, non-Sergio-based optimism about this team isn't down to this summer's moves, but also last year's moves, which is, I think is something we didn't touch upon, but we all absolutely agree with. And he goes on to say, and though Levy deserves credit, it also underscores his biggest failure as Spurs chairman, which is that 18 months where we bought nobody. Basically, what he's saying is it's taken some time for our signings last summer to settle in. If we didn't have those 18 months, who knows what team we might have now. What do you think, Nathan?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we said it before, we'll say it again. We did so much damage. We've now done what we should have done then. There's this kind of a packaging of last summer's very, very good signings with sort of seeing that out, finishing things off this summer. And it's easy to see them as one thing, but they're not, because they occurred in two different summers under two different managers. But it's you know, if you buy like a really fancy engine, you've also got to buy the chassis to put it all in. And otherwise, it's just sitting there and it's useless, you know. So, yeah, he's right. I don't know really what else to say.
Yeah, agreed. Bardi, anything you'd add?
Yeah, I agree with that. We've seen with Lo Celso and Ndombele, sometimes individuals take 12 months to kind of settle in and improve. And by going 18 months without buying a player, you do kind of put everything back a year. Especially, that was so costly to us because that was straight after the World Cup, after having, I don't know, 11, 12 players involved up until the final week. It was a bit short-sighted, and it's definitely hurt us going. It's still kind of hurting us maybe 2 years later.
That is it for this week's Extra Inch. Hope you've enjoyed. It's been a long one. We've run long today, boys. But there was lots to talk about. It was fun. Let's hope we thrash some Austrian minnows and we can come back happy again.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, E. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.